Welcome to this week's edition of Far West Texas. Readings from the Big Bend Sentinel, the Monahans News, and the Fort Stockton Pioneer, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Melanie reading the Big Bend Sentinel on October 22nd, 2020. Blue Origin fine-tunes lunar landings, inspects asteroids, and blast off last week. By Stephen Paulson. Far West Texas. On a clear day last week, at a launch pad in a remote part of Culberson County near Van Horn, Blue Origin successfully launched its new Shepard rocket for the seventh time. The company says its repeated launches demonstrate the reusability of its rockets, an important detail to obtain a future where millions of people are living and working in space. As its vision statement reads, Blue Origin also hosted a webcast celebrating the event, which racked up more than 200,000 views on YouTube. On this rocket, Blue Origin packed 12 commercial payloads, including shipments from NASA, to do space experiments. The company is helping NASA land on a lunar surface faster, safer, and repeatedly, Bob Smith, the CEO for Blue Origin, said on the webcast. There was also the Box of Rocks experiment, a project testing device to take magnetic samples from asteroids. Blue Origin's webcast featured scientific discussions, an interview with a top NASA official, and a virtual tour of the Blue Origin cabin. This particular trip did not have any crew or passengers, a company spokesperson told the Big Bend Sentinel. The webcast began with a promotional video. The human need to explore is deep within all of us, a narrator states. Our ancestors crossed mountain ranges and sailed upon oceans to map new lands. As music plays in the background, Amazon tycoon and Blue Origin founder Jeff Bezos is seen inspecting a previous successful liftoff. When our descendants look to the stars, perhaps from a rocky moon or colonies floating in open space, they'll remember this time, the narrator continues. When they reflect on where it started, they'll remember this place. The webcast was hosted by Caitlin Dietrich and Joel Ebby. Ebby described himself as the resident creative at Blue Origin. He outlined some of the company's coronavirus precautions for this launch. Everyone on the mission is following very strict guidance to mitigate any kind of COVID-related risks, Ebby explained. Down in West Texas, we have essential mission crew only. In April, Blue Origin saw criticism after it said it had received mission essential designation to test a rocket for suborbital space tourism. Three employees in Washington State tested positive for coronavirus, and the company ultimately said it had no plans for travel to Van Horn, where its West Texas operations are based. But as the Big Bend Sentinel explained that month, the Department of Homeland Security has classified a large swath of the workforce as essential, from groundskeeping and pool repairs to transportation and logistics work like space travel. While most of the webcast focused on the scientific nitty-gritty behind the launch and experimental payloads, there were also some down-to-earth moments. Also on the new Shepard last week, as the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported, were postcards drawn from children across the country, illustrating how they personally envisioned a future of space colonization. If you could draw one of those postcards, what would you put? Ariane Cornell, described as a reporter at Blue Origin, asked Jim Bridenstine, the NASA administrator. Cornell also serves as the company's director of astronaut and orbital sales. What is your vision for the future? There's no question I would draw my family, Bridenstine said. I would definitely put my family on a postcard and send them to space and dream about a future when humanity is going to be living off the Earth. After around 30 minutes, the wait was over. A voice at the launch pad counted down. And then, against a blue sky, the new Shepard launched off, with roaring flames, leaving a plume of smoke beneath it. New Shepard's gaining speed, Dietrich narrated. That BE-3 engine is really doing its work. What a clean burn. About 15 minutes later, the new Shepard landed. That never gets old, to watch that rocket. Gun show producer files lawsuit against Marfa, by Stephen Paulson. Marfa. Devil's Advocate Armory, a local gun show was scheduled to take place in Marfa this May. But Marfa city leaders had already closed public buildings as a precaution against coronavirus, nixing the gun show as well as any other events that may have been scheduled in Marfa-owned buildings. At the time, organizer Gregory Romu threatened to sue, and now he's done just that. In a lawsuit filed in Presidio County District Court this month, Romu argues Marfa breached its contract with him by refusing to allow his event to go on as planned. Despite the ongoing coronavirus crisis, the lawsuit asks for monetary damages of at least $100,000 and interest at the highest legal rate, as well as attorney fees and costs. In February, Romu spent around $550 to book the Marfa Activity Center for his gun show. Around a month later, on March 20th, the city ordered public buildings closed. Romu, though, said he wasn't informed that Marfa public buildings were closed, and that his event, therefore, couldn't happen until around a week before the event was scheduled to take place. At that point, he had already expended thousands of dollars organizing the show and had contracted with vendors to attend and sell firearms, the lawsuit states. In court filings, Romu's lawyer, Warren Norrod, cites a Texas Attorney General opinion stating that emergency orders from local governments in Texas can't regulate or restrict the sale of firearms. He also includes sworn declarations from four vendors, all of whom said they expected to make thousands at the event. Besides lost potential revenue, Norrod argues Romu also lost money he'd already spent to set up the event. He estimates those losses at around $3,000, including $400 spent on radio ads and more than $2,000 spent on items necessary to make the gun show a success. Romu's fight with the city over this issue has been ongoing since at least May. In a post on his website earlier this year, he argued that Marfa officials had committed tyranny when they shut down your gun show. Also in May, shortly before the scheduled event, Romu's lawyer, Norrod, sent a letter to the city, which is included in court filings. In that letter, which the Big Bend Sentinel previously reported on in June, Norrod acknowledged that the city of Marfa can certainly choose to keep city buildings closed based on whatever reason it chooses, or no reason at all. But he noted that the AG opinion that emergency orders do not stop gun sales, and that Marfa had no confirmed coronavirus cases at that point. Therefore, he argued that Marfa did not have enough to inform Romu that his event would likely be canceled. If the city had contacted Mr. Romu in February or March or even April, the parties could have possibly worked something out, Norrod wrote. But since none of that happened, Norrod warned city leaders he would recommend the immediate filing of a lawsuit. At press time on Tuesday, Marfa officials had not yet filed a response to the filing, but Teresa Todd, the city's attorney, disputed the basis of the lawsuit. It's a breach of contract case, Todd said, and we had no contract. After Marfa received Romu's first letter, city officials held an executive session about the issue. Ultimately, they decided to respond with a legal letter of their own. In that letter, which is dated from May and also included court filings, Marfa's lawyer, Andrew Messer, argued that, respectfully, the city does not believe a contract was made. Messer argued that the pandemic is a serious threat. At that point, he noted, COVID-19 had already killed more than 1,500 Texans. Messer cited that both local ordinances and statewide orders to argue that Marfa cannot open its facilities at this time, but regardless, he wrote, I am asking the city to return the deposit. Stellina returns with Takeout Meals, Artisanal Groceries by Stephen Paulson. Marfa. Marfa's popular Stellina restaurant is back, but with a different concept. Now going as Stellina Mart, the eatery is half takeout meals, half boutique grocer. At the restaurant's website, store3542-8221.shopsettings.com, or just Google Stellina Mart, diners can choose from a range of meal options from prepared sandwiches and frozen soups to Stellina's signature enchiladas and pasta dishes. But there's also a range of new groceries from curated wines and cheeses to more exotic items like green peppercorns. When Stellina reopened last week, Minnie and Marfa rejoiced, but owner Krista Steinhauer couldn't help but feeling a little bittersweet. On one hand, she was getting to cook for Marfa again. It's so nice to work, she said, to do the thing you love in a town that you've lived in for 16 or 17 years. She was ready to be back in the space and making her signature brand of New Texas fare. But life, and life at Stellina, was so different. Crowds weren't dining at Stellina's cozy tables anymore. Even staff weren't getting too close to each other. Steinhauer had fans running the space to keep air circulating. When Steinhauer came back to the restaurant, she found glassware still out, a remnant of the pre-COVID days when she still had in-person diners. I have the stupid rack of wine glasses I haven't put away since March, she said. It almost feels like everything is frozen. In March, as people across the United States braced for the coronavirus pandemic, Marfa was quick to take precautions. Many restaurants and shops in Marfa closed early in March, days before even New York City, then a hotspot for the virus, shut down its public schools. First among those restaurants and shops was Stellina. It set a cautious tone when it closed its doors around March 12th, citing concerns about staff safety. Within days, at least a dozen local businesses had followed Steinhauer's lead. And even months later, Marfa has remained an outlier in the region, a place with little debate and dissent over precautions like mask wearing, at least among locals. Austin Dupree, a waitress at the former Stellina and now the cheesemonger at Stellina Mart, remembers those ominous early days of the coronavirus pandemic, when researchers knew little about the disease and even less about its global spread. People were realizing how quickly coronavirus was spreading in the United States, and there were growing concerns among Stellina staff. And then Steinhauer, Dupree recalled, asked the staff, "What do y'all think about not doing dine-in?" Everyone at Stellina agreed. Dupree said, "It was a total consensus. They tried takeout for a night, but even with to-go orders only, there was a lot more interaction with people than we were comfortable with," Dupree said. "And ultimately, Krista just didn't feel there was enough protection for us." Dupree credits Steinhauer for prioritizing staff safety and making quick decisions. "I've never had a boss that was more conscientious or supportive," she said. "She always puts her employees first. It's a pleasure to work for her." Still, closing the restaurant indefinitely was hard. Dupree recalled how after the last night of service, she and other staff members sat outside debriefing and grappling with the unknowns in front of them. "It sounds very movie dramatic," she said, but one of the other staff joked, "We might not be able to hug for a long time. That turned out not to be such a joke after all." As the pandemic shuttered Marfa, Steinhauer hunkered down for a while in the city of Austin where she has family. She brainstormed ways to revamp Stellina for an era of social distancing, eventually settling on the Stellina Mart concept. But even as much of Texas reopened in the early spring and summer, Steinhauer remained cautious. In June, she texted a reporter at the Big Bend Sentinel a news article about Austin eateries that had tried to reopen but were closing as they found cases. "This is going to keep happening," she wrote. "Why gear up to open, which is no small task, only to shut down again?" Later that month, as case counts surged across the Tri-County area and Governor Greg Abbott ordered a shutdown of bars, those warnings seemed almost prophetic. Now, at last, even Stellina's reopening, a sign that just maybe normalcy is starting to return to Marfa. Perhaps in the not-so-distant future, Marfa locals will be back dining inside Stellina or fraternizing with visitors to the region without having to worry about getting sick. For now, though, things are still different at Stellina, though the changes aren't all bad. One former waiter is curating wines. Dupree is curating cheeses, a job she's held in the past, including during the Great Recession in 2008. "Cheesemongering seems to be my recession-proof job," she said with a laugh. "I just love being back in the space," Dupree said of her return to Stellina. "It's nice to be working with this group again." Dupree says she's still figuring out what the people of West Texas want, cheese-wise, but she's already got some hunches. Idiazabal has been selling well, she says, as has Brabander, quote, Gouda. But with just one more week of the new concept, Dupree isn't the only one who says she's still figuring out this new model. Steinhauer says she's also learning the ropes on everything from customer experience, she hopes the website model isn't too confusing, to how to process complete online orders. One of the biggest questions for Steinhauer is what shape Stellina will take after the pandemic, and for now she isn't sure. One possibility she imagines is something like an in-person version of the current Stellina Mart, where customers can both browse artisanal groceries or stop in for a glass of wine. She hopes Stellina's bar can make a comeback after the pandemic. "I love that U-shaped bar so much," she said. "That's something I really don't want to change." In the meantime, like many in Marfa and beyond, Steinhauer still has worries. There are all the concerns of staff and customer safety, of course, the same concerns that initially prompted her to shut down the restaurant in March. She hopes customers will be able to navigate the new online ordering system, and she wonders if Stellina can keep up its margins in this strange new era. "For grocery retail, your margins are tiny," she said. "You can't put the same price tag on what you're offering because you're not offering an experience." In other ways, Steinhauer feels like she's come full circle. Before opening Stellina, a popular eatery for both Marfa residents and tourists, she ran Comida Verdura, a weekday cafeteria she describes as more proletariat. At Stellina, Steinhauer still served locals, but visitors became a bigger part of her business. She worries about whether we acclimated ourselves to require the tourist dollar, a decision that may have made sense before, but that now seems more like a liability. As Marfa comes out of the pandemic, Steinhauer isn't sure how many more switch-ups there will be at Stellina, or whether she'll go back to the Comida Futura model of primarily serving locals. Maybe that's what suits her, she says. After all, I've said it a million times, I'm not a chef, I'm just a home cook. Like business owners across the region and country, Steinhauer still has lots of questions about what the future will look like and how to sustain a restaurant business in the meantime. But at least she's certain about one thing. It's nice to go back to nourishing food, she says. Feeding locals always feels good.
Hello, this is Michael, continuing the Big Ben Sentinel reading on Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. Upcoming COVID-19 testing in West Texas, published October 21st. Within weeks of state-provided testing coming to West Texas, the state has announced more mobile testing sites arriving to the area this month, all free of charge for any who want it. Like other recent state-run sites, hours will run from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. or until testing capacity is reached, and the test will be given with a mouth swab. Appointments can be made 24 hours in advance of the testing day at curativetest.org, but appointments are not required. A spokesperson for the Texas Department of Emergency Management did confirm that while some event flyers in West Texas say a personal identification card is required, that's not really the case. For the state mobile testing sites, we're not going to turn anyone away if we don't have an ID, the representative said. However, we do need to know the person's county of residence and a way to contact them back about their test results. Those who get tested can receive the results through a phone call, email, or by text message, depending on what contact information they provide. One important change is that Marfa's testing will take place at the Presidio County Courthouse, not the USO building where previous mobile testings have taken place. That is in part due to ongoing voting at the USO building this month. And while Presidio County has decided to close its offices to the public on October 28th in order to help the testing site run smoothly within its facilities, the clerk's office will remain open for those wanting to hand deliver their mail-in ballots. Here's a list of upcoming testing dates in West Texas. Van Horn, Monday, October 26th at Karen D. Young Auditorium, 801 Houston Street. Presidio, Tuesday, October 27th at City of Presidio EMS and Fire Station, 100 East FM 170. Marfa, Wednesday, October 28th at the Presidio County Courthouse, 300 North Highland Avenue. Alpine, Thursday, October 29th, North Brewster County Emergency Response Center, 102 South 2nd Street. Fort Davis, Friday, October 30th at the Jeff Davis County Fire Station, 202 Court Avenue. All testing sites are open to every resident in the region. Meet the Candidates, Part 1, General Election Edition. Meet the Candidates, Part 1, Texas 23 and Texas House District 74, published October 21st. Welcome to Part 1 of the Meet the Candidates series. Early voting started in Texas last week with the voting site at the USO building in Marfa and at the Annex Building C in Presidio. With Election Day itself just around the corner, the Big Ben Sentinel reached out to candidates in the region to give them a chance to speak on issues affecting residents of the Big Bend. This week features two major races in the area. First, there's the race for Texas 23, a battleground district where Gina Ortiz-Jones, a Democrat, is facing off against Tony Gonzalez, a Republican, for outgoing Republican Representative Will Hurd's congressional seat. On the state level, we're also taking a look at the race of Texas House District 74, formerly occupied by Democratic State Representative Pancho Navarez. Navarez announced last year he wouldn't seek re-election. This race features Ruben Falcon, a Republican, and Eddie Morales, a Democrat. Stay tuned for part two of our series next week, where we'll be looking at the regional Texas State Senate races, as well as the race for three Marfa City Council seats. U.S. House of Representatives, Texas 23, Tony Gonzalez, Republican. Question: what is your number one priority in office, and how will it impact residents? My number one priority is getting our economy back on track and safely, wholly reopened. The pandemic has done so much damage to so many people's livelihoods, and Congress has to be laser-focused on helping our people recover. Question. Our region is off the major interstates and has fewer than 20,000 residents. Once in office, you will represent large swaths of Texas. How will you ensure our voices are heard and our needs represented? I have traveled to every part of this district and listened to the concerns of as many people as possible. I don't care if you are Republican or Democrat or independent. I'm running to serve all of Texas 23. Too often, rural areas of America get ignored by Washington, and it has to change. I'll work hard to make sure our rural areas get the federal resources they need to thrive. Question. Many residents in this district have to travel more than 90 miles to access specialty and critical care. Some older residents even move away for this reason. Do you have a plan to make health care more affordable, more accessible, and less confusing for residents? And what role do you think the government should play? We must focus on increasing access to health care for rural Texans. My opponent wants to go in the opposite direction by installing a complete government takeover of health care, a disaster for rural Texas. We need to be focused on expanding choices and access and lowering costs, not socializing medicine and raising taxes on the middle class to pay for it like my opponent wants to do. It is my belief that we must reduce the ever-growing burdens and paperwork that does not improve patient care and costs put on physicians and medical practices because of federal mandates and regulations. This was the driving force in Obamacare that drove doctors out of business after its passage. Additionally, we should protect, evaluate, and possibly expand federal student loan forgiveness programs for doctors willing to work in a rural setting. Question. A recent survey showed Presidio County had some of the biggest population declines among cities in Texas, as residents leave for better job opportunities and more affordable housing. What's your plan to ensure that longtime residents and families can thrive here? We need to find new ways to incentivize job creation in rural America. I grew up in part in the rural parts of this district, and I know the challenges we face. But I also know the people here are resilient and just want a fair shot at the American dream, and that is what I am running to fight for. Question. In his final months in office, Representative Will Hurd has pushed for expanded parks and landmarks, from a bigger Big Bend National Park to a Blackwell School Heritage Site in Marfa. What role do you see for parks, recreation, and tourism in our area, both as it relates to the local economy and quality of life for residents? Certainly, our parks and tourism industries play an important role in the economies of the communities within this district. The 23rd Congressional District has more federal parks than any other congressional district. People love to visit the great outdoors, and our district has many opportunities for people to do so. I will always be an advocate fighting for the natural resources our district provides to families to learn and spend time together outdoors. Question. The coronavirus crisis has presented major challenges not only to public safety, but to the local economy. How can the region protect businesses and workers without compromising public health? And how will you make sure the Big Bend region has adequate resources to handle this crisis, from testing and contact tracing to protective equipment? We have to do all of the things above. We have to invest in the equipment to help us safely reopen. The two things, healthcare infrastructure and building our economy, go hand in hand. We cannot reopen completely and successfully without doing the hard work of investing in the healthcare technologies needed to combat the virus. Gina Ortiz Jones, Democrat. Question. What is your number one priority in office, and how will it impact local residents? My number one priority will always be fighting for working families like mine. My story starts more than 40 years ago when my mom came to this country as a domestic helper for an opportunity at the American dream. She raised my sister and me on her own, and it wasn't always easy. My mom worked multiple jobs and long hours, and we relied on critical investments, not handouts, but investments like reduced lunch and subsidized housing to make ends meet. I went to college on a 4-year Air Force ROTC scholarship and served in the Air Force, deployed to Iraq, and spent nearly 15 years working to protect our national security because I knew I had to give back to a country that had given my family so much. Now I'm running for Congress because I know that protecting our national security starts with protecting our economic security here at home. In the short term, that starts with getting this pandemic under control and getting more relief in the hands of working families and small businesses so they can get back on their feet and we can safely reopen. In the long term, it means making the investments to create more good-paying jobs, ensure every student gets a first-class public education, and expand access to quality, affordable health care so that every family in this district has the same opportunities that allowed me to grow up healthy, get an education, and serve our country. Question. Our region is off the major interstates and has fewer than 20,000 residents. Once in office, you will represent large swaths of Texas. How will you ensure our voices are heard and our needs represented? We can't leave Texans in any part of this district behind, whether you live in a small town like Terlingua or a big city like San Antonio. All 29 counties in this district are equally important. Before the pandemic, I was all over this district, including meeting with folks in Marfa and Alpine and Presidio and Marathon and other communities throughout the Tri-County area, and I'm committed to fighting for working families in every part of Texas's 23rd congressional district. If elected, I will absolutely have a district office in West Texas, and I also look forward to working with local leaders, including Mayor Manny Baeza and Mayor John Ferguson, who I am proud to be endorsed by, to ensure that the Big Bend region is well represented in Congress. Question. Many residents in this district have to travel more than 90 miles to access specialty and critical care. Some older residents even move away for this reason. Do you have a plan to make healthcare more affordable, more accessible, and less confusing for residents? And what role do you think the government should play? Far too many families, particularly in our small towns and rural communities, quality, affordable health care is still out of reach. This issue is deeply personal to me. When I came home from Iraq, I wanted to surprise my mom, but she surprised me. She told me that she had been diagnosed with cancer and was already undergoing chemotherapy. I will never forget the fear I felt standing in her kitchen and hearing the news that I could lose my mom, but also that her care might bankrupt our family. Thankfully, she had good health insurance through her job as a public school teacher, which saved her life. But every family deserves that same fighting chance. I'll work to protect and expand the Affordable Care Act, introduce a public option to increase competition and lower costs, strengthen our rural hospitals and community clinics, allow Medicare to negotiate the cost of prescription drugs, invest in broadband to increase access to telehealth, and protect programs like the ACA, Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid that are critical to sustaining our rural health care facilities. Meanwhile, my opponent supports eliminating the ACA. And just as Washington Republicans have done for the past decade, he has produced no plan for the 300,000 Texans in this district with pre-existing conditions like diabetes or asthma who could be denied coverage without the protections of the ACA. That's wrong, and especially cruel during an ongoing public health crisis. Question. A recent study showed Presidio County had some of the biggest population declines among cities in Texas as residents leave for better job opportunities and more affordable housing. What's your plan to ensure that longtime residents and families can thrive here? Texans in the Big Bend region, including in Presidio County, want their kids to be able to grow up and see a future here. In the richest country in the world, in a state with a $1.8 trillion economy, making the investments our communities need isn't an issue of resources, it's one of leadership. In Congress, I'll fight to create more good-paying jobs by investing in the rapidly growing clean energy sector and making sure the Presidio Port of Entry is ag-certified, an important source of revenue for Presidio. Instead of finishing the wasteful, ineffective border wall, as my opponent supports, let's work to increase the trade and traffic between Presidio and Ojinaga. We need to expand access to broadband so that small businesses can compete. Patients can use telemedicine and telepsychiatry, and remote learning and work are reliable options. And we need to strengthen our rural health clinics and train, attract, and retain healthcare workers in this area of Texas so that residents can get the care they need in the community they live in. I've also been honored to meet with students at Presidio High School, and it's clear that while talent is universal, opportunity is not. As the proud product of public schools myself, I'll fight to ensure every student, regardless of zip code, has a first-class public education, including advanced skills and vocational training, so that our students are prepared for the jobs of the future. In his final months in office, Representative Will Hurd has pushed for expanded parks and landmarks, from a bigger Big Bend National Park to a Blackwell School Heritage Site in Marfa. What role do you see for parks, recreation, and tourism in our area, both as it relates to the local economy and quality of life for residents? Our public lands and historical landmarks are not just a point of pride for our community that deserve protection, but are a critical economic driver, and one that has been hit hard by the pandemic. We have to get COVID-19 under control so that we can safely and fully reopen and welcome travelers who want to visit the treasures our district has to offer. In Congress, I'll work to protect not just these natural resources and historical landmarks, but also to protect infrastructure, like Amtrak, which is a critical link for tourists finding their way to Big Bend. We also shouldn't be wasting $15 billion on the border wall supported by Tony Gonzalez and President Trump. Not only could we spend those billions on other priorities like creating good-paying jobs, improving access to quality, affordable health care, and investing in rural broadband, but a border wall that seizes private land and would run through Big Bend, threatening the local environment, would be an absolute travesty. Question. The coronavirus crisis has presented major challenges not only to public safety, but to the local economy. How can the region protect businesses and workers without compromising public health? And how will you make sure the Big Bend region has adequate resources to handle this crisis, from testing and contact tracing to protective equipment? While Texans are working hard to practice social distancing and other CDC guidelines, and leaders in the Tri-County area have stepped up to protect public health, including by implementing local contact tracing efforts, we still don't have a federal plan to ensure our communities have the testing, contact tracing, and PPE they need. It's completely unacceptable that, thanks to failures at the state and federal levels, communities in the Big Bend region have had to wait weeks between rounds of testing, and that more than 6 months into this crisis, data on COVID-19 cases critical for knowing whether our communities are in the midst of another outbreak is too often delayed. We can only protect businesses and workers by fully addressing this pandemic, and that means electing leaders who will prioritize listening to medical experts instead of politicizing public health and working to delay, distract, and deny in the midst of an ongoing crisis. And while my opponent said that more stimulus payments would cause Texans to stay at home and watch Netflix, I'll fight for another round of COVID-19 relief for working families, including direct aid, as well as more assistance for small businesses. Texas House of Representatives, District 74. Reuben Falcon, Republican. Question. What is your number one priority in office, and how will it impact local residents? I am a fiscal conservative. I believe that every expense should have a direct funding source. The state of Texas continuing to function, even with the decline in revenue due to COVID-19 and the oil bust in 2020, shows that the state budget is inflated and that it is time to zero line the budget, bring in all state agencies and ask them to justify their expenses. I want to put an end to unfunded mandates. They strain the local government's resources. And I want the chief county appraiser to be an elected position. Our region is off the major interstates and has fewer than 20,000 residents. Once in office, you will represent large swaths of Texas. How will you ensure our voices are heard and our needs represented? Texas House District 74 is the largest state district in the country and the most ignored. The reason it is most ignored is that since the early 1990s, the state representative from this district has been of the opposing political party as the governor. If I am elected, I will be of the same party as the governor, lieutenant governor, and the Speaker of the House. This will make it easy to make our district, its citizens, and our issues relevant. Many residents in this district have to travel more than 90 miles to access specialty and critical care. Some older residents even move away for this reason. Do you have a plan to make health care more affordable, more accessible, and less confusing for residents? And what role do you think the government should play? We have the freedom to live where we want. However, we all have to make decisions that impact our lives, whether it be where our kids and grandkids live or access to specialty medical care. The government cannot play a role in that. I would love to promise you a hospital in every town and a clinic in every corner, but the reality is we have to fix the revenue versus expenses problem at the Capitol first. Then we can relocate funds to rural Texas where they are really needed. A recent study showed Presidio County had some of the biggest population declines among cities in Texas, as residents leave for better job opportunities and more affordable housing. What's your plan to ensure that longtime residents and families can thrive here? No doubt people are leaving rural Texas and moving to the city. The cost of maintaining our schools, roads, and hospitals is being left to those of us staying, as we watch our property taxes steadily increase to pay for those needs. I have a plan to replace property taxes with a consumption tax. Homeowners, landowners, and business owners cannot continue to pay for all to enjoy the benefits of living under the Texas umbrella. Everyone should contribute. Question: The coronavirus has presented major challenges not only to public safety, but to the local economy. How can the region protect businesses and workers without compromising public health? And how will you make sure the Big Bend region has adequate resources to handle this crisis, from testing and contact tracing to protective equipment? With 20 years of elected public service, I am a local control hawk. The state should not interfere with the decisions the local governments make in regard to how to manage their communities. Instead, the state should offer assistance to support whatever actions they take. Local citizens see their elected officials at the store, church, or just out and about in the community. They are easy to approach, to be asked questions of, or to be offered input on all local matters. And when that doesn't work, vote them out. Eddie Morales, Democrat. Question: What is your number one priority in office, and how will it impact local residents? Fighting for continued funding for public education and infrastructure improvements within District 74. These two priorities have a direct effect on citizens of all ages, and we need to make sure Austin takes care of District 74. Question: Our region is off the major interstates and has fewer than 20,000 residents. Once in office, you will represent large swaths of Texas. How will you ensure our voices are heard and our needs represented? I plan on continuing to work with people throughout the district by using technology such as video conferencing and virtual town hall meetings. I also plan on continuing my regular contacts with elected officials and citizens through the friendships established since the primary race. People can join our campaign newsletter and stay in touch with the important issues to the district, or let us know any of their concerns by going to www.moralesfortexas.com and signing up. Finally, I plan on visiting District 74 on a regular basis, just like I did throughout the campaign. Question: Many residents in this district have to travel more than 90 miles to access specialty and critical care. Some older residents even move away for this reason. Do you have a plan to make health care more affordable, more accessible, and less confusing for residents? And what role do you think the government should play? I will definitely support all efforts at expanding Medicaid and supporting or co-authoring legislation that recruits medical professionals in rural Texas through loan forgiveness programs. Physicians also need an increase in Medicaid reimbursement, and we must demand that rural areas receive adequate funding for medical needs. Question: A recent study showed Presidio County had some of the biggest population declines among cities in Texas as residents leave for better job opportunities and more affordable housing. What's your plan to ensure that longtime residents and families can thrive here? Creating and developing economic opportunities in these rural areas is key to the continued progress of any community. We must increase our efforts at improving our state infrastructure and support the oil and gas industry that is vital to District 74. I will support reasonable legislation aimed at cutting waste from the oil and gas industry and stop the flaring practice. We must also create opportunities and pathways for the continued investment in renewable energy projects, as well as support Blue Origin, the space exploration company owned by Jeff Bezos from Amazon, which is using Van Horn as the primary location of their rocket launches. In order to create affordable housing opportunities, we need to ensure that the state supports local municipalities and county governments with their infrastructure improvements. When basic public utilities are available, the growth in the community is that much easier to accomplish. Question. The coronavirus crisis has presented major challenges, not only to public safety, but to the local economy. How can the region protect businesses and workers without compromising public health? And how will you make sure the Big Bend region has adequate resources to handle this crisis, from testing and contact tracing to protective equipment? We need to demand a national pandemic plan, as well as a state plan that places the health and safety of our citizens first. As a small business owner, I know firsthand all of the safety and precautions that owners need to take when operating retail shops. The governor should return local control to municipalities and counties. In conjunction with the local health authority, the local governments can best address the needs of the community in a pandemic. I will continue to support efforts at establishing special task forces that are in charge of contact tracing. The state should also make sure cities, counties, and school districts have PPE equipment and enough COVID-19 testing to address the needs of the community. Hello, this is Michael reading from the Fort Stockton Pioneer, Thursday, October 22nd, 2020. Following in her family's footsteps, prickly pear embroidery owner continues tradition set forth by Women and Family, by Nathan Hauer, Pioneer Editor. Growing up, prickly pear embroidery owner Carrie Collins Acosta was able to see what it takes to be a strong, successful businesswoman. The Fort Stockton native's great-grandmother, Layla Noland, was the first woman in the state of Texas to hold a county seat, being the county treasurer of Nolan County. Her grandmother, Agnes Collins, then went on to start her own business, Mrs. Collins Fried Pies. My grandmother owned a fried pie business for most of my life, so being a businesswoman is something that was very normal in our family. My great-grandmother held a county seat. She was the first one in Texas, too, Collins Acosta said. Women have been very strong influencers in my life. Colin Acosta's mother, Kathy Collins, also greatly influenced her to become successful. After she was born, Collins attended college to become a nurse and worked as one as her daughter grew up. While I was in school, she was in school, stuff like that. So women have always been very strong in my life and what they did, and their husbands always stood behind them, Collins Acosta said. Initially out of college, the Fort Stockton native decided to work in the library for the Fort Stockton Independent School District, but the job wasn't fulfilling her creative side. I had a really easy job working at the library, and it wasn't feeding my creative side, and so I showed my husband the embroidery machine, and he got all excited thinking we can start a business, Collins Acosta said. So her husband, Adam Acosta, and her bought the embroidery machine in 2011, with hopes of it leading into a successful business one day. Just 1 year into the venture, Collins Acosta knew she needed a building to start working out of, as it was slowly becoming overwhelming at her house. As it progressed, I realized I just can't do that at home because people would show up at my house any given hour asking, "Can we do this?" she said. So that's when we moved into town. The Fort Stockton native opened the Prickly Pear Embroidery Shop in 2012 at 804 North Water Street in Fort Stockton, with more of a narrow focus on what she made, which has since grown substantially. We started out as just an embroidery, and as time has went, we've added a full-color printer, she said. Collins Acosta added the 54-inch printer along with many other services that include making signs out of various material and commercial window tinting. The business is still growing. I still have plans to add different equipment. The sign business is really taking off. I do a lot of signs. I still do the embroidery, Collins Acosta said. Alongside running her own business, the Fort Stockton High School graduate volunteers to help the Water Carnival and is a member of the Water Carnival Board. The event is notorious statewide and is held every third weekend in July at the Comanche Springs Pool in Fort Stockton. This past summer was the 85th annual event, which was canceled due to COVID-19. The Water Carnival holds the pageants, including Miss Fort Stockton, and has acts that include ages 3-year-olds and up, as well as fun activities for all ages. I've been involved in the Water Carnival for over 30 years, being on the board and directing shows, she said. I'm very community-oriented, so that is always very important to me. Two PC Sheriff's vehicles totaled in pursuit, approved for replacement by commissioners. By Nathan Hauer, Pioneer Editor. The Pecos County Commissioners Court decided at their regular meeting on October 13th to approve the replacement of two Pecos County Sheriff's Office vehicles that were totaled in a high-speed pursuit on September 19th around 11 p.m. According to Pecos County Chief Deputy T.J. Perkins, a deputy pulled over the suspect at the 310-mile marker. He stepped out of his vehicle before becoming uncooperative. The suspect drove off and got on Highway 290 towards Sheffield, where he came to a complete stop. One of the deputies then got out of his vehicle before the suspect backed up into the sheriff's vehicle. The other deputy then chased after the suspect down a dirt road before he put it in reverse once again, causing a collision to the side of the second sheriff's vehicle. Neither deputy was hurt in the incident. The suspect later rolled his vehicle on down the dirt road and was taken to the hospital in Ira Ann. The charges are going to happen in Crockett County, according to Perkins. A Ford Expedition and a Chevy Tahoe were totaled in the pursuit. The vehicle replacements will end up costing the county $67,780.63 after insurance reimbursement of approximately $30,000. Arson suspected in old hospital fire. By Nathan Harrer, Fort Stockton Pioneer. Arson is suspected in the fire that lasted about 45 minutes on Wednesday, October 21st, at the old hospital building in Fort Stockton, which is now abandoned. The building is located at 405 North Spring Drive, right by the Middle Pecos Groundwater Conservation District office. It is going to be suspicious. The exact cause is still under investigation, Fort Stockton Fire Department Chief Jesse Dominguez said. This is our first arson case in a while. The fire chief added that no one was injured in the fire and the building was vacant upon arrival to the scene. The Fort Stockton Fire Department received a call regarding the fire at 11:16 a.m. and the fire was put out by noon. The building is owned by the county and, according to Dominguez, is potentially going to be demolished in the near future. With numerous recent fires, the fire chief also addressed arson concerns regarding other fires in the recent time, stating that the only fire that hasn't been ruled accidental is the KFC Taco Bell fire that happened October 4th and the one on Wednesday. The KFC Taco Bell fire is still under investigation. This is for sure our first arson case of the year. All the other fires have been accidental except for KFC. That's still under investigation, Dominguez said. COVID-19, two additional deaths, nursing home outbreak confirmed in Pecos County. Pecos County officials confirmed two additional Pecos County residents passed away due to COVID-19-related issues on October 17th at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa. One resident was a 94-year-old female who was hospitalized September 29th at Pecos County Memorial Hospital. The second patient was an 80-year-old male who was hospitalized September 30th at PCMH. The two fatalities bring the death total to 8 in Pecos County since the start of the pandemic and are the first deaths since August 15th, exactly 9 weeks prior to Saturday's fatalities. Despite the two deaths, active case numbers in Pecos County reached 22 on Monday, October 19th, the lowest active case number since September 29th. That number drastically changed on Tuesday, October 20th, as an outbreak was reported at the Pecos County Nursing Home in Fort Stockton. 14 residents of the nursing home tested positive. 4 of those residents are hospitalized as of October 20th, 3 at PCMH and 1 at NCH. With 4 additional positive tests on top of the nursing home outbreak in Tuesday's report, the active case number is at 40 as of Tuesday, the highest number of active cases since October 12th. For October 13th through October 21st, there have been 40 new positive tests and 31 recoveries. Since the start of the pandemic, there have been 349 positive tests in Pecos County with 301 recoveries. A total of 2,385 have been tested, with 1,925 coming back negative, 80.7%. There are 25 results pending as of October 20th. Fort Stockton man dies in head-on collision in Winkler County. A 37-year-old male from Fort Stockton died in a head-on collision early Tuesday morning on State Highway 115, 2 miles north of Kermit. The victim has been identified as Jose Grado Dominguez. According to the DPS preliminary investigation, Grado Dominguez was driving a 2017 Chevrolet Camaro south on State Highway 115 when he entered the northbound lane and collided with a 2007 International Truck Tractor hauling a semi-trailer at 1:48 a.m. on Tuesday, October 20th. Grado Dominguez was pronounced dead on the scene. The driver of the semi, Adolfo Sanchez Suardo, 49, of Fabens, was not injured. The road conditions were dry and the weather was clear, according to the DPS report. The crash is still under investigation.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Monahans News for Thursday, October 15th. City and county to use $550,000 of CARES Act funding to offer free COVID-19 testing. The story was written by Paul Cyphers and Christy Sullivan. The majority of federal dollars the City of Monahans and Ward County received through the CARES Act will be used for free COVID-19 testing for city and county residents beginning Thursday. The City Council and Commissioners Court unanimously voted Tuesday to use the $420,000 the city is eligible for and the county's $132,000 in federal funds from the Coronavirus Aid, Relief, and Economic Security Act and offering free COVID-19 tests for city and county residents. Of the $553,000 in funds, 20% will be available immediately. Quote, when an individual with insurance goes and gets a COVID-19 test, the funding will cover out-of-pocket expenses for them. If an individual does not have insurance, it will cover the cost of the entire test, City Manager Rex Thee explained. The amount of funds available per city or county is based on $55 per person. County Judge Greg Holly explained, quote, we first learned that COVID expenses for things such as lost revenue and paying time off for COVID is not covered under the Funding Act. At first, we didn't think it would be worth taking the funds, especially with the extra burden of audits associated with the funds. But we can use the funds to cover COVID-19 testing for county residents for those that do not have insurance or have the costs covered by their employers. So that will make it worthwhile to move forward. The cost of testing can deter people who need to be tested from doing so. That in turn increases the local risk of transmission when infected people don't know they are contagious. The federal guidelines for these current stimulus package to local governments now allows those funds to be used to subsidize testing of local residents for the virus. My thanks to City Manager Rex Thee for working with me on putting this program together for our residents, Holly said. The nearly $2 trillion CARES Act, which Congress passed late March, included individual stimulus checks in addition to billions of dollars in federal aid for state and local governments. CARES funds can only be used for COVID-19 expenses cities made between March 1st and December 30th that were not included in their budget. Quote, with government funds, you have to decide if whether the amount of funds you get and what they can be used for is worth what you have to go through to get the funds, such as added auditing and substantiating those purchases. But getting more people tested will hopefully help contain any type of surge and to keep residents from any out-of-pocket expense, Thee said. The county funds will be used for testing of residents outside the Monahans city limits, unincorporated areas of the county, and the smaller communities of Grand Falls, Pyote, Wicked, and Barstow, while the city will manage the Monahans residents with their funds. In order for citizens to be eligible for the free COVID-19 testing, they must be tested at the Sandhills Family Clinic, Sandhills Family Clinic East, or Ward Memorial Hospital. Quote, the clinics or hospital will verify residency and then will bill the city or the county for any cost over and above what the insurance will cover. The program will begin October 15th and continue as long as funds are available or until December 30th, Thee said. Funds not used for COVID-19 testing could be used for other COVID-19-eligible costs incurred by the city and county. Quote, with the amount of testing the city and county has been averaging a month, I don't see us using the whole amount with 2.5 months, but we do have other options to look as far as spending the money before the deadline runs out, Thee added. There are some monies available for Barstow, Grand Falls, Pyote, Thorntonville, and Wickett, but it is not clear as of press time whether those cities will apply to receive those funds. COVID-19 cases remain low in Ward County. The story was written by Paul Cyphers. Active cases of the COVID-19 virus in Ward County have varied over the past few weeks in a range of none to about 8 to 10, but remains low. As of Wednesday morning, there were 6 confirmed cases and 3 probable. Overall, there has been 150 confirmed cases with 142 recovered and 2 deaths. There has also been a total of 61 probable cases with 57 recovered and 1 death. A total of 1,071 tests have been administered in the county with 21 pending. More than 400 ballots cast as early voting continues. As of 10 a.m. Wednesday morning, 401 voters have cast their ballots for the fall general election. Barely the second day of early voting, lines of people waiting to cast their votes have been seen not only in the Ward County Clerk's office, but out into the Ward County Courthouse foyer to the front entry door. Over 200 ballots had been cast by noon on Tuesday. Ward County has over 6,200 registered voters. The highly contested presidential election and U.S. Congress Texas District 23 appears to be driving a heavy voter turnout not only in Ward County, but across the state, according to Wire reports. Early voting will continue until October 30th in the clerk's office, located in Suite 101 on the first floor of the courthouse at 400 South Allen Street. Voting hours are 8 a.m. until 5 p.m. Monday through Friday in the clerk's office. The office will be open through the lunch hour.
Thank you for joining us for this week's edition of Far West Texas. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.